Hello, everyone. Thank you for joining me again on the BIPOC Outside podcast. I'm Chris Cromwell, and today we're sitting down with Elle Renee Blount. Elle is a Harvard-trained designer, creative strategist, professional adventurer, storyteller, and photographer. So let's get into it, shall we? Set higher, higher, hell, higher. Elle, thank you so much for joining me. How are you today?
Oh, I'm fantastic. Thanks so much for having me. It's good to be back in California. I was just freezing in Banff. And so I'm super hyped to be here. Thank you.
Oh, I'm so excited about this. I was watching that you were in my backyard just recently up in Banff during the worst weather that we have had in 25 years. How's Banff?
Truthfully, it was really great. I had gotten invited to go months ago. The snowpack wasn't there this fall. And so same thing within California. And so we rescheduled it and it just happened to fall on the coldest of the cold snaps. However, truthfully, whenever someone invites me to travel or wants me to come, I'm always humbled and grateful that this thing is still going. I really thought being in this industry would last 6 months and that I would be doing my passion projects. And so I'm still deeply thankful. And it was, despite it being that cold, I was deeply thankful. And actually, I have polar training next week. So it was maybe a little bit of a...
It's awesome. I got to say, I was super impressed. So that's my local hill that you were on. And I was not outside. I can't ski right now anyways. I'm torn MCL. But I know a bunch of us locals were like, no. But you were out there. So props for you.
I was out there. Now, there's one day I went out there for long. They shut the list down. And then they shut it down. And you can't really do anything when your goggles, you're so wrapped up that you condensate. And then the condensation immediately freezes. And so I had to ski blind. Like, I just went down. There was, like, nothing. And then immediately after, they're like, our mount's closed. But yep. Somebody had a baby out there. I saw the world's smallest snowboard. I was like, I would not have my baby out here.
We're a hardy bunch up here in central Alberta. So let's get back to you. Are you originally, I know, school in Cambridge, NYC, now in the Bay Area, but were you originally from New York City?
Absolutely. No, my mom grew up there.
Okay.
I'm from Georgia, but I grew up military. And so my dad was stationed all around. And so I was born overseas. I lived in Alaska, Texas. And then my parents, they both live in Georgia. They're divorced now, but we grew up traveling.
Oh, wow. Okay. So what was your introduction to the outdoors?
Truthfully, I did not grow up with like how the outdoor world celebrates being outside. I would say they were outside, but not in a way that's traditionally celebrated. I've come from the Deep South and we grew up not going to certain places. And it was historically known not to travel to certain places. And then with the military moves and drives, like, we barely got out the car. My dad had a 10-minute, like very efficient kind of style. And so it wasn't like we recreated, but not in the same way that would be celebrated now. And I also think some of those, yeah, it just wasn't as safe to, felt as safe to travel to certain places that seem celebrated now because there were places that you truly didn't go or there was a huge fear. And so I would say, like, I went to, like, summer camps here and there, but it was really college. It was really college where I got like this kind of more of a, I would say in our world now, what's traditionally celebrated as being outside, but I would say my family has been outside, but just in a different way.
Yeah, I feel that as I got into college, getting into traditional outdoor, quote unquote, traditional outdoor sports, I got a lot of nervousness from aunties, from my granny about the places I would be going and who I would be going with and if I would be safe.
1,000%.
Yeah. So college is where you started climbing?
Yeah. So like they had a climbing wall. And so I went to School of the Arts for high school and middle school. And so we actually did not have sports. But clearly, like you can tell who's athletic. So it's always the like of the most athletic. But I went to a fine arts magnet school, so we just didn't have the opportunity to do all of our budget went to music and the arts. And I have peers that went to Juilliard and things of the like. And we had no sports budget. It was like very academic. And so when I went to college, it was my first time to be able to explore. And I really liked that they did this. And so every semester, you had to take 4 PE type credits. And so I took it and I liked it so much. I just took one every semester because I was like, I'm here on scholarship. I'm just going to get as much as I can and try. And so I like took running. And like, and then I took this and I was like, let's take racquetball. Like I was like taking, let's take yoga. And like, and then I took climbing. And at that time, this was in Atlanta. And at that time they built the largest climbing wall in the US. And I immediately switched to climbing at Stone Summit and working there because I wanted to figure out how to keep climbing for free. And that's how I got into it.
That's incredible. That is incredible. So you were the co-producer and the host of Beyond Familiar. And I love the punchline of it is that you love to try something new every month. So is that where you got that inspiration? Is that where you got that motivation to try something new every month?
I think it was coming from a background where I grew up, I would say, lower middle class. By the nature of the people I went to school with and who I was around, I could hear and see what people were doing. I just wasn't necessarily always experiencing it, even though they thought I could. They're like, we're all going to Breck. And like, I wasn't going to Breckenridge.
To one of the most expensive places in Colorado. Want to come?
And so that wasn't accessible. But based on the way like my mom made sure I appeared, some things were coming from the goodwill and like maybe because of the way I spoke and diction and things like that. But we were not wealthy whatsoever. But the kids I went to school with, a lot of them had access. And so I would hear about these things and that got magnified even more going to college. But yeah, Han, what was your question one more time?
Oh, you answered my question. That was great.
Yeah. I'd like been around and I've heard, but I didn't get the chance to experience it for myself. And one of the things I just truly believe in is as someone that didn't necessarily always have the most exposure, that it doesn't matter where you're coming from. It just matters like you can do it and you can have access. And it doesn't matter if you're starting at 19 or 40 or 50, you deserve the opportunity to just try. And so that's something I'm really big on is just figuring out how to try it. Like, how do I know if I don't like it? Or how do you know? And like, that looks so fun. Even though I may be much later than my peers, I'm not going to let that dissuade me from being able to try. And so I just believe we should like, and I think that's been a bit of an ethos and a bit of a compass for me to make sure, like if I'm doing climbing events, make it free so people can try. Like if they want to really do it, then we'll figure something out, but just give people the ability to try.
One of the things that I liked so much about that series, I mean, we're in New York City before this, you're in the Bay Area now, like incredibly urban areas and finding ways to find adventure in urban areas because people think that adventure, outdoor adventure is like far away from them. It's really not.
No, not whatsoever. And like, I just always feel like hiking, it's really just a walk. It's all it is. They just put a little extra sauce on it to say you got to be in these grand places. No, you don't. That's not true. And so don't feel like you can't do an urban hike or urban walk. And I guarantee you there's so many exciting things that you can find just where you're at, whether you're in New York or Atlanta or Memphis or Dallas. There are some gems wherever you are. And so that's what, and like a lot of my photos, they have an urban component that I'll try and put in there. And so like, yeah, and that really was what that series was about. And I had no video experience then. So I was like, let me see what I can do to like push across what I want. And hopefully I'll get more opportunities to keep playing and trying and being able to play in that lane.
Yeah, it didn't come off as that you had no experience. It came off brilliantly. And we're going to link it in the show notes so everybody can go back and watch this. I want to talk a little bit about your perspective on climbing. And in an interview a few years ago, you were talking about all of the Black climbers that should be seen but aren't being seen, and that how your work in photography is trying to address that. Talk to me about that. Talk to me about your ethos in your photography, in your work.
Sure. That's essentially how I got into it. Like, I just remember when I was in school, I always wanted a camera, but I couldn't afford one. And like, I interned in California and then just bought a used one. And the reason I wanted one is because, like, when you're seeing the marketing materials from climbing, I know a ton of people who are talented. Now, you have to understand, like, it's relative to their experience level. Most of the people I know did not start when they were 10 or 8 or 5. But for someone that's only been climbing 3 years and is doing climbing at this level, when you realize there is, like, that's so good. There's so many people who are so dedicated and, like, out there, but no one knows their stories. And, like, if you're not based in Boulder, Denver, Salt Lake, places like that, there's all these people where these companies are, where these photographers are traditionally are. If you are outside of that, they have missed so many people. And what I recognized was, like, I'm not being necessarily marketed to because they don't believe I'm out there. And it's not a saying that we're not there. It's just you didn't think we were out there, or you didn't think we were great marketing material. And I think it's probably a combination of both. And especially this is pre-George Floyd. And so this is like 2017, 2018, when I was like, let me grab a camera. I'm going to illuminate all these people that I think are doing incredible things and who I have touches with. And it takes me a while to put a camera in someone's face. I have to get to know them. I need to know what makes them laugh and make them really comfortable. And especially after people wanted me to show up in front of the camera, you start to realize things that don't feel good and how can I make an environment that feels as best as possible and makes people feel really celebrated.
That comes through in your photography, that how do I make them laugh? How do I make them comfortable? Your photos express such joy all the time. There's this experience of joy that's very evident in the individuals that you're working with. And I like that you've called it, you're not leaning into suffer culture. I like that. Tell me about that.
It was just obvious. Like, the whole goal, there is also a little bit of a, I wouldn't say a selfish goal, but like a little bit of a personal one. I was like, people think you're that crazy person, or like, oh, I don't want to do that. None of us are out there, but you got to make it fly and appeal. And so when people realize you're making appealing, like, you're bringing flavor to it, you're bringing the joy to it, seeing someone suffer, why would I want to do that when I may be already suffering where I'm at? Like, what type of escape is that? Especially if you're constantly talked down to, or like, you know what I mean? Like, the ways in which you're already in the world, you're having, like, whether you're having microaggressions or very real things happen to you, you need this moment of joy and escape and feeling like you can be there in the way in which you want to show up. And so that means if you want to show up and feel like you want to have a good time and you want to drip outside, why, that should be perfectly okay. If you want to show up and be badass and illuminate how incredible the incredible athlete that you are, you should be able to demonstrate that. And so you don't have to show up like a khaki person, a khaki only. And like, that's not how you have to show up. That's not how our culture shows up. And so understanding what's the reference points to me that I like, and that appeal, and the reference points to other people, and what makes me different from the other people that have historically been in this industry, and what can I do? And I'm a pretty like happy-go-lucky type person. And what's going to appeal to make people feel like they can be there, and also realize when I'm doing these shoots, when the win is different, the win is not necessarily always the summit or conquering something. The win is just being able to be there because we historically haven't been depicted. And so it's that, and coming in with that intention.
I love celebrating the showing up where you are as you are, but we've got to be real. There can be a little bit of suffering. On your climb to Kili, you said your mission was to have fun, but you got altitude sickness.
I got it horribly. Like, that's part of it. But like, I didn't always, I think there's this other thing that people do have to understand, like, there anyone can do a hike, but there are certain things you really got to train to do so it isn't a suffer. But there's always going to be uncomfortable moments, and not always, but on some of the big stuff. But there's a range. You can go do the most comfortable thing, and that's totally fine. And you can do something and really try and push yourself in this other way. And that's very relative to your ability and like how your vessel moves and operates and all these things. And yeah, I got altitude sickness, but I was like, I don't get to come out here every day, so I'm just going to have to push through. And recognizing who I'm with, this is one of the few all Black expeditions, like, and we're supporting a Black guiding company. Let's get after it. And like, but we were really jolly. It wasn't like I'm showing up and people had ice beards, and that wasn't the case.
No, the embrace of type 2 fun.
I think there has to be, especially, but so much of my work first was so much about inviting people to the party.
Yeah.
Only getting enough of the other type of like, no, this is like the serious aspect of it, but these people are still enjoying it.
Yeah.
But so, yeah, there was type 2 fun without question. I mean, the skiing was type 2 the other day.
And for those of you that don't know, type 2 fun is where when you're doing it, maybe not the best, but when you look back, you're like, oh, that was wicked and I would do it again.
Oh, for sure. For yeah. Sure. It's, the joy is also in the journey.
Yeah.
Might be some uncomfortable parts.
But that's okay. You get to celebrate pushing through it. You get to celebrate your personal achievement.
For sure.
Yeah.
Without question.
So on that trip, when you climbed Kilimanjaro, you had an interesting experience after the climb with the Datoga peoples. And tell me about that.
It was interesting. First, I just want to always make sure I'm illuminating other people who were there with me. When George Floyd hit, I'd been trying to be in the outdoor world for a while. I'd like grabbed my own camera and I'd actually worked with a whole bunch of brands, but none of them had actually published it until they realized they all of a sudden needed that content that they just were sitting on hard drives with. And so all of a sudden, all this stuff, and I was like, nope, everyone has to get paid. You're utilizing it in a different way. And the North Face blasted my face as their first response to George Floyd on a project they had sat on. Like, they had done nothing with it for months. And like months, it was just literally on our hard drive, despite a person or two saying, this is some of the best we've got, but they won't buy it. They won't do anything with it. And so when George Floyd happened, all of a sudden I wanted to make sure everyone in there, because it was on spec, so that's speculative. Okay. And so that means no one's getting paid yet. And so I had friends in t-shirts, like they're getting t-shirts. And so that is part of how some people enter into the photo world of like, we don't know, let's just feed them some gear and see what happens. And then if they like it, you'll get paid for it. The hard part is, people really liked it and their bosses were like, no. And so it just really sat there. And so all of a sudden George Floyd happens, and then that company did buy it, and which I appreciate, but I also appreciated them stepping up and saying no, because I was like, then you have to pay the other people that are a part of this. And so when my face got blasted, I posted about me wanting to get on expedition teams. I've been climbing for 10 years. I think I have the fitness. I'm athletic. I just necessarily haven't had key things that most BIPOC people haven't had, mentorship, nor some of the opportunities. I've been fighting to get in. I'm just doing the most of the best I have. And so I like posted that, and then I reposted that same photo of this. I put like, love to do expeditions, this and that. And I never got a call from the North Face. It actually took me some wrangling to even get the next project with them, which I did. But it's a hustle to make sure your name is out and they know that you're capable. But a year later, I reposted it and I was like, my face was used and that was it. And so a close friend of mine, who's become a really close friend of mine, he was like, I'm already going. Do you want to hop in on my trip? Which was Andrew King, who's a close friend of mine. He was like, I'm going to Tanzania and do you want to hop in on my trip? And I was like, absolutely. Let me run and go get funding from, at the time I got funding from Smartwool, Backcountry, and Peak Design. And I appreciate all of them for helping me get out there. And I like looked at his stuff, and this is before he blew up or anything. And I was like, people don't go on trips with this guy. Why are people showing up? And so then I was like, let me do something. And then let me see if I can get it in outside. I made sure before I did anything with them, I was like, if I'm going to be a one-hit wonder, please do not use my photo. I'm not here to be a flash in the pan. And that's what you want to make me out to be. We need to have a really truthful and open conversation. And they said, okay. Andrew never knew that, but that's how that Tanzania trip happened. And so we finished Kilimanjaro early. And so we're like, this guiding service, they hadn't had clients. It's the pandemic. They hadn't had a lot of clients. So how do we keep it rolling? And like, we finished early and we're like, all right, we're going to give them this amount of in dollars just to support like any money that I'm getting. And then they're like, hey, let's do a safari. And we were like, yeah. And then we're like, let's pay you for the safari and let's pay you extra. Let's make sure all your guides, everyone in your team gets taken care of for. And then turns out the first day of safari was epic. The next day, you're just sitting in a car. And like, I didn't have the right lens for it. And then it starts to get like you're just in there. Yeah, and like we didn't get to go all the way out to the Serengeti. And I realized you've got to make sure you prepare for the experience, but this is all like bonus. And I had the guide's friend, the two people that were guiding us there, and I'm up for everything. And they were like, let's go visit some tribes. And I was like, if we can do this safely, let's go do it. And so we're out there, and then Andrew was also having a down day. So let's just get out this car and like, let's do something that's a little bit more active. And so we go and visit and like, let's do it as safely as possible. And then we go and visit one tribe and we went hunting with them. And then we go show up on the other tribe. And this whole time, people, when you visit a continent and you know that you come from it, but they know that you haven't, they know you're not from there.
Yeah.
And so, truthfully, you feel really American. And so they, by my haircut, by my features, they knew I'm not from there. And real quick, like really quick. And so it started at the airport. They knew, of course, they knew you're not from there because you're flying in.
Yeah.
But they knew I wasn't coming back. Like I wasn't like returning. And so I get there and everyone's like, they just know you're American.
Yeah.
Or Brazilian. But by and large, they're thinking you're American. And so this one tribe, we're finally there, and this tribe keeps staring at me. I'm like waving back, trying to be extra friendly. Like Andrew leaves and goes back to the car, and we had this kind of long experience, this long day. And finally, the chief comes up, and these people are a lot closer to my complexion. Like if you've ever been to Tanzania and around the Great Rift Valley, they have this beautiful, dark, rich, like everyone could be a model, this rich complexion. And I didn't have it in the way that they had it. And so there's this tribe and they migrated down from farther north. And so they were a lot closer in complexion and hair texture. And they kept staring at me the whole time. And I was like, and just like doing anything to make them laugh or things like that. And then the chief goes, where's your family from? And I was like, my mom grew up in New York. They were like, he was like, no, you are from here. And I was like, and I'm just like listening and trying to be very interested. And he was like, I want to welcome you home. And like, it's like a moment where you don't know what to say. And you get like, because this is the only people that looked remotely similar to me. And ended up being, and they're like metallurgists, and they make all the precious metals and like the spears, and they're really a craftsman people. And it just ended up being like deeply heartwarming. I know that was a bit of a backstory. You can cut out.
No, I'm not cutting any of that out. That's an amazing story. And when I read that, I loved that. I'm biracial, so I'm very obviously not from the continent, but being on the African continent, I felt that too. It's like, even the black side of my family we're very obviously not from here, even though at some point 400 years ago, we were from there. But I loved the story of finding a welcoming, finding like an acceptance in the outdoors, because that's not something that's very common for Black people. It's a very rare experience to have that like acceptance and welcoming in a like group.
It was really unexpected and it makes you tear up. And yeah. So like, you just don't know. And I was just laughing with them when we were like, and I was like, oh, I like that skirt. And like, they would like do like a bit of a shimmy and make all the beads dance together and you could hear the noise. And I always want to be very respectful of the camera and like ask, like, is this okay? And then I show them all what it looks like. Like, yeah. Can this okay? Is this okay? But I have to spend time with people first before I even like, after a while, then it becomes like, okay, if they feel a calm or an okay around me. And it ended up just being like this kind of deeply special moment. And I'm so appreciative to that team, including Andrew, including Abel, who were there. And like, we just didn't know what we didn't know the moments that we would have. And it's why I wanted so badly to let people know about who it is they are, and like, and also make sure I'm always illuminating that kind of that power and that type of trip, because I never expected to be welcomed like that. And they were like adamant that no, you were from here. And I was like, okay. And like, I have a older brother who did a DNA test that said like my father's family is from Sierra Leone. It's just very interesting. And people don't realize that East Africa had a huge slave trade.
Yes.
Huge. And it's, you can tell when you look at other countries like Yemen and all these other places, they clearly have an Eastern African influence. But I don't think that slave trade gets talked about enough.
No, it certainly doesn't. And I think that's like the narrative of the very specific like British colonial sort of Atlantic slave trade as it fits to the Canadian and American colonial project. That's what we talk about when we talk about it at all. Yeah. And I love the idea of, because we're always trying to find these affinity spaces in the outdoors here in North America. And I loved sort of the layer of that story, you being on the African continent, being in Tanzania and experiencing that there as well. It was a really beautiful story. Another thing that we will link in the show notes, because everyone, you have to read this and you have to see the photographs that came from it, because beautiful.
Oh, thank you.
Your work from the beginning, like you said, you're looking at normalizing BIPOC folks in the outdoors and not in the traditional sort of Colorado, Salt Lake. And you did a series of alternate covers after George Floyd, talking about all of these things that have been sitting in hard drives and databases. On Instagram, you did a series of alternate covers of outdoor magazines featuring people of color to sort of provoke the outdoor industry. And I thought this was one of the more beautiful pieces of advocacy that I've seen on social media in a long time. So tell me about that. What was the thought process behind doing that?
Sure. After school, I worked in brand and innovation, and I think people knew that. And working at those type of firms, they always talk about Patagonia. Like, that is the case study of Patagonia. It's constantly brought up to all the other C-suite teams. And like, I remember one time someone from the Patagonia suite came to our office for a lunch. And I'm like the lowest paid person there at the moment because I'm just out of school. And I've been trying to do this outdoor thing on the side. And he's like talking. And so I remember at the end of it, I got up and I said, hey, and I'll connect this to the story. You do so many amazing things. But yeah, I never see someone like me in your marketing materials. If you're taking the lead on this, why can't you take the lead on this too? Like, I would love to see it. And then that's only because Patagonia had reached out. And then I told them I wasn't privileged enough to work with them. And I highlighted all the ways in which I was not privileged enough. And the head of photo sent me a thank you, because I think she'd been trying to illuminate that. And she just needed someone to also say it. And I think with all these things happening, and I've had to do so much extra just to get these images out and to illuminate, like, there's people who are special. There's people that need to be seen. When George Floyd happened, I had hard drives of stuff that I'd gone out and done on my own, and brands were aware of it, but they just hadn't used it. And so I was like, okay, in strategy and brand strategy from working at these firms, they believe in like, how do we make this brand think about what they're doing? And so you have to do these types of provocations. And so all these companies we would work with, and we'd only work with their executive teams, we would do these provocations when they would walk in. And like, and it was super experiential. And okay, and after seeing and doing those, it's what can I do for the outdoor industry that's going to allow to prove my point without really saying it? And so that's what I was trying to do with those covers. It's like, how can I make a provocation with stuff that I've had that they all have known about and just put it out there and try to do it in a beautiful way and let people know this is what you haven't been seeing, but it does exist.
It was a beautiful piece of advocacy at a time when there was a lot of hashtag activism. And so like juxtaposed against some of the other nonsense that was going on, just exceptional work. So you talk about how, and you have been behind some of the things that have been going on that we have been seeing forever. And then suddenly George Floyd happens and your work gets pushed to the forefront and all of these new conversations start happening. So now here we are in 2024. What's your assessment of the overall industry? How good have they done on making good of their commitments to communities of color since George Floyd?
Oh, for some people, it was purely a moment. Let's just be honest and real. That was a moment for them. And like, you have to recognize that as a person of color, like someone is going to want you and how are you going to utilize them back? They're utilizing you for something. And so how are you going to think about what is this? How can I use this? And use it not only for my benefit, but to make sure I'm not the only one, the only person that can win. And I absolutely knew it. Like, I thought this was going to last literally 6 months. But if you recognize the people that are still in being able to work in the industry, they had been doing it as they had been doing it prior. First, you have to have an honest and really hard passion for it. It is such a hustle. It's not what people think because it's so romanticized. And you have to really demystify that. And I think by trying this out and trying to figure out how to work in it prior, I had demystified like, oh, this is really what it is. And you have to take it. And like, but what could it be if I'm a part of it? And how can I make it fun for me and the community I want to build? And just be really truthful and honest that, yeah, they're going to want to work with you for this, but what else can you do? Or like, oh, like there's just people doing it in a brilliant way. And then some of these companies, they just feel like, yeah, that was a moment. And people hop around a lot. And so that creative director or that CEO or that marketing person might have only been there for a year and put this in place, but will they still be doing it? The truth is in time. And I can tell you, there's some people with really great intentions. And then there's some people who are unsupported. So you might have one person there that really wants it to help. And then their boss is like, they're all about just profit. And like, that's just not what they prioritize. And you're going to have to figure out how you're going to go in an intention and make sure you can get what you want out of it and understand someone's going to want to use your face and your likeness. And how are you okay with that? And make it so that you're okay with it if it's going to achieve X, Y, and Z, and that you're being compensated and that you're being treated well. Maybe you can invite other people to train with you to be able to accomplish that goal. Like, there's just different ways of understanding. You have to figure out how you can maneuver. And let's just say, I think the moment, it was a moment. And that sucks to say, but I knew in 3 years from there, are all these people still, like, the amount of calls I got, what's going to drop off?
Yeah.
The harder part, I think, for me is recognizing, I think truly one of the tougher things is as a creative, one of the things that got to be unsettling were hearing about photographers almost like, I've got this Black person. And I was like, what? And that was not their ethos. Like, I had my work, someone submitted my work and told me they were going to include me on this job. And this person is huge in the outdoor world. And then I find out they went and did a shoot that looked exactly like mine, used all these people that came from me. And then all my work was the reference samples. And then I had to go to the brand and say, my work was used. And that is not how you're an ally to get this work. This person has a retainer deal. And what do I have? So there's like you have to recognize, like, now, like, that's the hardest part. Like, if you want to be an ally, invite other people to tell their stories. It's not always going to be the same from these few guys that are able to do it. Like, it just made me so angry to know that this kind of, this Caucasian gentleman, like, used me in that way to get work and then never said, hey, all your work was so useful. He told me he was getting the job and he wanted to give it to me and he was going to be like basically the producer, but he went and used my work to get a job and I was completely included out off of work that was never his and work that he was never trying to do prior. Versus there's so many photographers and creatives of color that are being cut out because it's like we have our one guy, and some of these guys are really great, but some of these guys, like, we should be able to tell our own stories. We should be able to tell different stories. And that more, there's just ways, if you are an athlete, if you're a person of color, you can request anytime I do video or big projects, I request that there's someone of color behind the scenes. You can request that. I said, like, hey, I believe in making sure that this is a super diverse team. Like, I'm going to need another person of color to be behind the scenes. And, like, that's allowed Black DPs, they've found. That means Black videographers, other Black photographers. You can also advocate by saying, hey, if there's no one that you guys know about this role that can fill this, can you bring a person of color to PA or shadow? Just that you're giving someone an opportunity to be there and see what's needed to be on these locations and sets. Mm-hmm. And so there's just so many things like that where I think it's gotten really difficult because now it's just gotten really hard to sometimes compete if the white guy with all the resources is now just wanting to use all people of color too.
Yeah.
But it depends. Some of those guys are really good and intentional. And some of them I'm like, you weren't really actually interested in this.
Yeah.
And especially if I'm hearing how that person felt so tokenized, there is a reason why sets should be open and diverse and people should feel good. I've definitely felt like you just included me. You told the shoot was for me, but you really wanted my friend. And everyone comes to these shoots with biases. Like,
uh-huh.
I thought this was a shoot that's going to do this. And then you're this Black girl on the side. And they don't utilize you. That's why, like, those shoots, when you're seeing joy, and make sure everyone has a moment. You're just not, like, Black person in the back. But shoots and who's on the are really important, and that those reference points are important. Like, but there are some really solid people in the industry, but we also deserve to tell our own stories, and you can advocate for that. And, like, I'm super appreciative of, there's some amazing guys that really get that point. And then there's some sharks who are maybe there to profit from you.
Yeah, that's important advice. And I don't think a lot of people starting out in the outdoor industry recognize that they have the power to abdicate for that. People are just so excited to get the spot, to get the opportunity. And that's such important advice for you to give back to folks. I'm practicing not saying young folks starting out, because there are folks starting out at a variety of ages, which is fantastic. I also think that the way that you've spoken about the intentionality when you are creating the set is so important. And the soapbox that I try not to get on, but I get on it every show, is that if you don't have people of color behind the camera, in the marketing room, at the decision-making table, how can you create marketing material that appeals to the BIPOC community?
I agree. And some people really think that they can cut you out. And there's just something missing. And it's typically the way they felt on the set. Like I tried my best, but I didn't really. And I know what it's like. I've been in front of the camera a lot. And so I definitely know what it's like to feel like you're there, but don't feel as celebrated as the person they may be exoticizing or really wanting. And all my friends will say that. Like, they're like, oh, I just felt like that Black dot on the side. Felt like that Asian person, the Asian female that was being highly over-exoticized. And, like, everyone will say that. So being a part of behind the camera how do you illuminate people behind it and get like a completely different feel. And in my creative studio, I hire people who are overlooked every time. And like, and the only time you can't do that, like there is growing who can be available. And that's just putting people in positions like, and okay, that person that rigs big wall may not exist yet, but how can you invite them to be a PA or like invite them to be talent? And this is how you can get paid and be here. And like, you're going to have to figure out how we can get your skill set up. Or like, how can you, there's a lot of people trying to figure out how to make it. And like, I don't know, if I can say anything is like, you have talent, but you have to figure out how to refuse to be denied and let people know what you're capable of. And truthfully, women are also underrepresented. Finding women director of photographies in the outdoor world is already hard. And women with a Steadicam, that is one of the hardest things, and video's gotten so important. And so I need women in this with me. I need this. And there is a different level of sensitivity with risk when you have some more women on there, like, oh, we're not about to do that, versus men. And I'm just going to be completely honest. Yeah, I'm just going to be completely honest. And like, and there's just so many rad women. And like, I've worked with some amazing brands, and it was a women-focused campaign, and the photographer and the video guy, they're men. It happened. And this is a major brand. And so there's just women who are also available, but figuring out how to make it is hard. And I'm going to say, if you want to be a woman and be a producer, be a location scout, those are jobs that pay well. You don't want to be the photographer every time. Like, there's some moments where being a producer, you will have your weight in gold. And there's so few producers of color. It's a hard thing to figure out how to, a tough nut to figure out how to crack. But if you can crack it and say, I'm available, I can make sure your shoot happens, I know this location, and you're willing to figure it out and have people ride with you. There's shoots that I was like, I would love to have a producer of color on this. And it changes the dynamic of who's there. And so leaving shoots where people feel like they really got to have fun, it is a job, but they can leave with a smile. I've had shoots where people left crying because this is the first time they felt like they were in this environment where everyone was so similar to them and they felt deeply supported. Like, that means so much. And so I know I've talked a lot, but you're needed here. Your presence is needed, and figuring out how to be and stay, it's not easy, especially now that we have some peers that are coming at it with a completely different intention.
Yeah, that's so important. Such good, important advice for folks starting out in this industry or who want to change their direction in this industry. And I'm excited for folks to hear that this, all the different ways that this is possible. And no, it's not, it's never easy. Achieving goals isn't easy, but possible. And that's
good. We need Black athlete managers, Asian athlete managers, Indigenous athlete managers. That would also crack open some stuff.
Yeah.
Like, shout out to Trey Good, who runs Snow at the North Face. Amazing guy. Incredible guy. And open to everyone. But I think there's a different sensitivity of understanding, like, oh, this person is becoming a pro and they didn't start from a child. They started when they were a complete adult. And look at that. Like, there has to be something when the playing field has never been even. And like, there's some things to be really celebrated and illuminated. And there's some incredible people out there that people still don't know about. They may be shy, or they just may not want to be known. I've also run into that too.
Yeah.
Like, there's a South Asian gentleman here who was so good, but tells me because he doesn't climb B16, he can't be on athlete teams. And I was, if people knew you. And they're like, I have to work at getting to know people so people can feel comfortable. Like, if people knew you, oh my God, like, you don't need to climb B16. When did you start? That is incredible. And there's people like that. And I'm just excited to see where things go, but please know you can advocate for who shoots you or what that team looks like. And that's important.
Tell me a piece of your work that's coming out globally on April 23rd. Tell me the story behind shooting the cover for the new book for Pack Light.
Oh, just doing that was a lot. There's a whole backstory to that one. But essentially, my agent got a call, and we had been in talks with like Antscape, which is Disney ESPN before. Like, they asked me if I could jump out of a plane and shoot. And I was like, that is not my specialty. I cannot be ready for that in 2 weeks. I appreciate someone saying, like, someone Black should get this opportunity. But I was like, I haven't jumped out of a plane one time. And to shoot, that's a lot. Like, and so then that book, they reached back out. And I know that Dragon Sky, they go by their trail name when they're doing the trails, have been a fan of my work. And the people at Disney, like, I think might have given her a list. And then she ended up choosing me, which is another way of, like, advocacy. Like, so shout out to her for wanting me to shoot her book cover. And so I go out there, and I had to tell the people at Disney, like, one, I'm going to get this girl off the trail. I got to get this woman off the trail. She is not going to be looking and feeling good. I've never met a thru hiker that was like, I'm feeling lovely. And so there's just a lot of extra that went into making her feel good. Because if you read what that book is about, it is deeply personal and deeply powerful and deeply heart-wrenching. A story of triumph that comes from things that are deeply heart-wrenching. And so I was like, hey, can you give me the book? The people at Disney know nothing about, at least the people I interacted with, they didn't know a lot about thru hiking at all. I said, I'm going to need a wardrobe budget. And they were like, huh? I was like, when have you seen? I was like, these people are on the trail for months. They're still not looking and feeling good. And I just asked her, what are the three words you really want to feel? What do you want to feel out of this? And what powerful. She mentioned heritage. And she mentioned, and I was like, all right, I'm driving all over Oakland. Let me make sure we get head wraps. Let me make sure we do things like head wraps. Like, what do you need for your hair? This, they're not going to have this in Montana. Like, how are you physically feeling? Like, let's get your whole wardrobe. Like, let's treat this and give you the best time. Because one, she hadn't had photo shoot experience. So I know I'm going to have to be extra sensitive, extra accommodating. Oh, and then I was like, I'm going to actually have to hire a man with a gun. Like, I'd already pre-scouted some stuff. It's grizzlies everywhere. I'm going to have to hire somebody. And so luckily, I'd been to Montana a couple of weeks prior. And I went there and I had to finding a PA of color was impossible. But I was like, I need to find a guy that could play your role, which is like play a really amazing support role. And I informed them all about this person. I was like, I need you to make her feel incredible and like very supported. This is a person that may have a sensitivity of around men or around guys that may look like you from not feeling invited prior. And he completely got the assignment. And those are the people I so appreciate. His name is Tanner. I so appreciated how he showed up with so much kindness. And so I get there and I'm having to tell Disney where we're at. I'm going to have to drive. I have 24 hours to go do this. I'm going to have to drive 4 hours back up. And then another 2 hours from the hotel to get to the locations that are epic. We're no longer in this epic zone. And I want to do this for her. And they're like, okay, and we're going to need a complete wardrobe change. Like, I don't know how she's going to look. Like, you don't want to be on your first book feeling like, so making sure and giving her multiple outfits, giving her a lot of agency, like getting the beads, getting things that really evoke feeling like a woman king. Like, that's one of the things that she illuminated, like, I want to feel like this. And I was like, all right, we're going to make sure you feel like that. And so a lot of extra love in TLC, knowing what that book is about, knowing how she has felt, and like, how do you make this person feel as beautiful as possible and as cared for as possible, and just going out and doing it. I was exhausted, like going out, driving, like coming in, because it's coming in, flying, like that was a really long day. Fine, getting her off that trail, then driving back up, and then going to RI, doing lots of wardrobe. She's particular in what she wants, and just making sure she knew, okay, I've done a lot of wardrobe. This is what goes well. And then the next day, having someone who has location expertise as well on Montana, and like, and just doing, giving her every shoot and giving her every option of like, what do you want? What's going to be, or what I think is going to be an amazing book cover, and giving her wardrobe changes. The first hour, they're not going to like, they're going to feel so nervous.
Yeah.
And so really shooting for around 3 or 4 o'clock to be the best moment, and like giving her the best food, like everything, like making someone feel so cared for that it doesn't feel like a job. It feels like fun. And it was like 24 hours and over 10 hours of driving. Like, yeah, I flew in Saturday morning and left Sunday night or Monday morning. No, I left early, early Monday morning. But it was so much driving in like a 36-hour time frame to get her to and from and all these extra, and like making sure Tanner, making sure all the equipment was right, and like, and shooting it. And I think, I just really hope that people find a lot of strength and the power of vulnerability and her story. And hopefully I did my part to just my small part. The words are really her part, and that's what that book rides on. But a small part in helping this person feel beautifully illuminated on their first book.
Well, the pre-order is out now. We'll link it. The cover is gorgeous. And you know that when a photo looks like that, when it portrays that much strength, power, beauty, intentionality went into it. So I had to hear the backstory. And this is backwards to the industry. This is what happens when you hire not just someone who understands the backcountry and through hiking and the idea that no one comes off the trail looking like a supermodel and they probably haven't bathed in a month, but also the intentionality of someone who has cultural relevance, who has cultural understanding and cultural capital to be able to put all of those elements together. This is the kind of product that you get. I encourage everybody to absolutely look at the cover, pre-order the book. I'm very excited to read it. I've pre-ordered it myself. I haven't read it myself, but beautiful, beautiful work. And
thank you.
Yeah.
And thanks to Dragon Sky for having me. I just, in my experience of being talent, I remember someone who was not of the culture that told me I looked good. And my mom was like, I would never post this photo. And they have you out there thinking you look good and you look busted. And so I never want people that I work with to feel like that. Like, I did not, like, I'm always just going to tell you, like, maybe we should do something else. Like, you can't wear sherry powder in your hair on the trail. These people at Disney are not going to know that. And you can't wear stuff that attracts bears. I know that. These people are not going to know that. So I'm like, I don't know how she's looking and feeling. Let me go get the best head wraps I can do just in case, just for options, because she wanted to bring in heritage. And I was going around to like 4 different stores to find them all. But Disney doesn't know that. And like, these are all these kind of extra things. And she ended up wearing one of them in the cover. And I was like, let's bring the flavor. And she was so excited. She was so excited, and I was like, let me give you my mountaineering glasses. Let's make sure you pop with color. Like, your pack, that's authentic enough. Like, we know that you do this, that you're not new to this, you're true to this. But how do we make sure this appeals across to different cultures? And like, also, you want to feel good, and you want to exude that. And so I was like, we want our skin to be shining and glistening on a cover. You don't want to feel ash. I will always remember my mom saying, like, you didn't look good at all. They told you wrong. And that was like and just making sure it's as fun as possible to her. And yeah, I encourage, the book is called Packlight by Shalitha Curtis, who is also I Am Dragon Sky on Instagram.
Amazing. So what's coming up next for you? Do you have any big projects coming down the pipeline? What's going on?
So for me, there's always a couple of things. So I really am upping my Alpine training. And so that's something I have been doing that I don't know if people know enough about. And so I've gone to Chamonix the last couple of seasons. I've met Andrew there. And because I was like, he needs to be able to come with him. I just always appreciate him. We just did a big Portugal trip. And he's an amazing guy. Like, I feel like that people should know that with all of us, you're watching people become elite. I don't think we started there because we hadn't had the same resources, but you're really watching people become that. And the same with me. You're watching someone that in 2020 did not own professional camera equipment, that was borrowing stuff from work or whatever else have you. And you're watching me become. And so this year, there's hopefully bigger expeditions, more digital kind of programming. And I have my own studio, which I run, and it's always a team of people who are overlooked, whether it's women. There's always women. There's always people of color. And the vibe on our shoots are completely different because it's just a different ethos of like what the win is and how we're going to bring that flavor and that we all deserve to be there and to tell like incredible stories. And so that effort and just training and just making sure I'm not being a gatekeeper, that I'm being a gate opener and with who I'm inviting and just continually training and making life fun and doing things that I think are interesting without being so jaded by the industry and keeping things fun. It's a hard balance, but this end of tomorrow, I'd still be going out with my friends and trying to take photos of them. But yeah, there's definitely athlete endeavors and business ones too.
Awesome. Where do we follow your endeavors? How are our listeners following you?
So you can always find me at Urban Climb R. So it looks like Urban Climber. And my name is L. It's short for my full name, which is Lanisha. And then my business name is getting changed from Wonder House to the League of Wonder. But yes, if you have big shoots, please call me and my team of rad underrepresented folks and we'll pull it off. Maybe a little cheaper, slightly cheaper, not too much cheaper. We deserve to get paid. But some people's teams are so huge. You're like, why is this person here? And now you have this team of people looking at the talent and just making them so uncomfortable. And we run it a little smaller, but we do big budgets and just making sure that people are feeling good and hopefully more alpine and also always continually climbing. And I think my other push is making sure I can act as I creative direct all my shoots, but I would love to be a creative director or a creative ambassador more so for a brand this year. I've been in talks for years, but people actually doing it, I would love to see it happen.
We are rooting for you. And listeners, you are going to find all the links on where to find Elle, where to find the studio, a bunch of the things that we talked about, her prior work, all on the links for the show notes. Elle, this has been fantastic. Thank you so much for joining me.
Thanks so much for having me, Chris. I'm always humbled. And if anyone reaches out, I always try to hit my DMs back. And thank you just so much. And like, you deserve to be here. There is space for you. You just might have to fight for a little bit and know that you deserve to be here.
And that is it for this episode. Thank you everyone for joining us. Links on where to find Elle and all the things we talked about will be available on the show notes at BIPOCOutside.com. I hope you enjoyed this conversation as much as I did. And if you did, don't hesitate to smash the like button. I hope you'll join us again for another episode of BIPOC Outside.